Well, great pleasure to say hello to Nick Buchanick, who speaks to us from Vancouver. Nick, thanks very much for getting up so early to share with us a bit more about your documentary Shadow Company.
Thank you, Lisa, and good afternoon to everyone who's listening.
All right. Why the movie?
Why the movie? It's an interesting question. Why make a movie about a modern-day soldiers for hire? I mean, in my case, the question has a number of different answers. The big thing that drove me to make this movie was not the fact that I one day woke up and thought, oh my God, I really have to tell this story. It was much more personal than that. It was I went to university at the University of Cambridge a number of years ago. The years were 1995 to 1999. And, '91 to '95. And I made very good friends with a guy by the name of James Ashcroft there. I lost touch with him after university, and he contacted me about 4 or 5 years after I lost touch with him, and we started up an email exchange again, and at some point he announced that he was going to become a mercenary. I initially thought this was very funny because I knew James had joined the British Army. I knew he worked as a professional soldier in a number of different conflict zones as part of the British Army, and I didn't realize that what he was referring to was this growing field of private security contractors, which in those days were called private military contractors, but now that name has, grown out to fashion slightly, so they go by the name security contractors. And I started taking more and more of an interest because it was a close friend of mine, a guy who had graduated from a high-profile institution with a law degree, who worked as a successful lawyer, who then spent some time working as a professional soldier. And I thought it was very interesting that a guy like that would choose to do something like this. And I tried to find out as much as possible about this world, who these guys are, what they do, and why they do it. And I discovered a lot of fascinating stuff.
Okay.
And at some point, somewhere along the line, I thought it would make a good idea for a movie. So that's a very long answer to perhaps a very short question.
Okay, first-time movie maker. It must have been quite daunting going to Sierra Leone and going to Iraq and trying to meet these people. How did you set this up, and how were you received?
It was definitely very difficult. I mean, by their very definition, most of the guys that work in this industry are prior professional soldiers. Many of them have lots of special forces experience. These guys know what they're doing. They're not just some random guys that happen to decide to pick up a gun and go and be a soldier of hire in a foreign land. This is something that they've spent most of their lives training for in a variety of different ways, and they simply decide to take their skills over into the private sector. And because of their professional past, they don't tend to like talking to the media very much. There's a number of different reasons why. They don't tend to like talking to the media because the media makes a habit of vilifying them for a variety of different reasons. The media stereotypically likes to perceive them as these knife-wielding thugs. And I was often greeted with skepticism. People didn't believe that I wanted to tell a balanced story. It was very important to us to tell both sides of the story, to explain very clearly the good sides and the bad sides. If we wanted to find out who these guys were, like I said, what they did and why. And we didn't really care for spinning the story pro these modern-day soldiers, hire or anti. We just wanted to find out what the story was, and
okay,
we wanted to tell it because we felt that it was a phenomenon that needed explained.
Nick, one of the important things of in the documentary, and it's called Shadow Company, everybody, is that people don't realize the extent to which private armies are, in fact, determining outcomes, not executive outcomes necessarily, but outcomes in places like Sierra Leone and Iraq, and the extent to which, looking at Iraq particularly, the USA as an example is, in fact, hiring private armies and not just using their own. It's not just security and protecting business people. It's about fighting the war.
Well, the majority, just to be quite clear as to what the exact roles of the overwhelming majority of the security contractors, the armed security contractors in Iraq, the roles are primarily of a defensive nature. And it's a lot of these companies are very quick to point this out. The work that's done in places like Iraq is by armed security contractors. They are security guards. They might guard a location, or they might guard a convoy, or they might guard an individual. And yes, very frequently those individuals move from point A to point B. So you have rolling armored vehicles full of guys hanging out the windows with various forms of machine gun. But the fact is, whichever way you slice it, whether it's a defensive armed contingent or an offensive armed contingent, it's still very much part of the war effort.
But what I found, right. But I found very interesting, Nick, is that it's not only private companies who are hiring these men and sometimes women to protect them. It's also armies and countries that are hiring them.
Oh, it's a fascinating thing. I mean, it's essentially foreign policy by proxy. You know, if you can't, as a coalition, and the U.S., of course, was leading this particular coalition in this particular Iraq conflict, if you can't convince enough countries to join your cause, it's unprecedented that in this conflict, for the first time, they just said, well, that doesn't matter. We'll just buy a bunch of other people. So the fact that modern conflict resolution can be brought down to such a simple level of dollars is something that's very fascinating. And for sure, that's something that we try and address in the film and discuss it.
Can you give us a bit more about how many sort of private guns for hire are paid for by the Americans or others who are in Iraq right now? I just want to get a picture,
for sure.
Yeah. of that, because that was one of the most fascinating things in your film.
What's even more fascinating is since the film has been made, the numbers have simply been steadily increasing. I mean, the figure that's quoted in the film is that there are over 20,000 private security contractors operating in Iraq today. Bear in mind, first point, there are many more working elsewhere around the world. I mean, this phenomenon of a private contractor being involved in conflicts, it's certainly intensified over the last 5 to 10 years, but it's been around for a huge number of years. Ex-Special Forces personnel have always been able to find some form of work using the skills they've learned in the military, in the private sector. It's just there's a huge amount now, more than ever before. The fact is, and as a book that's coming out in 3 or 4 weeks, written by one of the guys we interviewed in the documentary, a guy by the name of Robert Young Pelton, the book is called License to Kill, Hired Guns in the War on Terror. As that book will show, there are now over 70,000 private security contractors working in Iraq alone.
And what are they hired to guard? Are they hired to guard installations? And what exactly are they doing?
They're hired to guard installations. They're hired to protect people who move from point A to point B. They're hired to protect other objects than people. For example, they might be hired to protect a convoy of food. They might be hired to help secure logistics of a particular location. Essentially, what happened is in the early days of the conflict in Iraq, this particular conflict, Gulf War II, as it's often called, in the early days of this conflict, the security infrastructure in Iraq was completely disbanded by the U.S., by the coalition forces. And because of that, it was decreed that there would be no security infrastructure within Iraq, and the U.S. Army was unable to provide it for the companies that needed to operate as part of the reconstruction effort. So these companies were forced to look elsewhere for security. So this wasn't an accident. This was a very deliberate decision to create this large market for security firms.
And the truth of the matter is that their rules for the coalition, and they also different rules for private armies.
That's very definitely the case. You know, this large number of security contracts is one of this. We uncovered very many interesting details during the making of the film, and hopefully a lot of those things other people will find interesting, and that's one of the reasons why the film has been quite well received when it has been shown. But one of the key things we discovered was that these private security contractors are not bound by local laws when they operate in Iraq. Now, what does that mean? You know, that means that usually, if me and you were just wandering around some particular country, if we decided to, you know, push a car off the road and cause it to crash, we would immediately be breaking a local law and we could be prosecuted for that fact. If a security contracting team does such a thing in Iraq, they are not liable to local laws whatsoever. Now, there are certain other disciplinary measures that can be enforced, but the simple fact that they're not liable by local laws is very scary. Now, that doesn't mean that these guys go around and do this sort of stuff all day, but the fact that they could and that the system is set up in such a way that they can get away with it is a very interesting thing to contemplate, and something that a lot of people are not aware of.
So, Nick, if they kill somebody, mm-hmm. they're not bound by local laws, they're not bound by The Hague,
well, everybody's bound by international human rights law, regardless of who you are.
Yeah, but what criminal law are they? What criminal law are they bound by, or what rules of war are they bound by?
It's a slippery landscape at the moment. It's something that essentially the rules are being written as we go along. There's a thing called MEJA, Military Extraterritorial Jurisdiction Act. So if people are very interested in looking up what this means, it's MEJA, and I'm sure Google will tell you a lot of information about exactly what it is. It's a form of extension of military law to contractors accompanying U.S. forces. This is a fairly recent addition to the legal jumble that contractors in Iraq find themselves in. But you know, as one of the people in the documentary Shadow Company points out at some point in the film, there's two different problems at stake here. A law is great because of the fact that it allows you to, in some way, prosecute a person once something is committed, once an offense is committed. However, a law does precious little to stop that particular offense from being committed in the first place.
All right. We'll continue talking to Nick Buchanan. You're welcome to call 4460567. Private armies, mercenaries involved in various hotspots around the world. He also looked at Sierra Leone. There's some comment in the documentary Shadow Company about what happened in Equatorial Guinea and some views on Nick Du Toit, whether he was guilty or not. Interesting documentary, Shadow Company. I want Nick also to talk to us about some of the characters who he came across, including Cobus Clausens, who we hope to speak to, and another mercenary called Neil Ellis, one is a Zimbabwean, one is a South African, who were featured in this documentary and spoke very openly and freely about their work. It's 15 minutes to 3 o'clock. You're with Lisa Chiat on Cape Talk.
In the last 24 hours, what's happened in your world?
Police say the motive for a double murder-suicide in Cape Town is not yet clear. A 47-year-old man allegedly shot dead his wife and her teenage son before turning the gun on himself. The couple stayed in a flat at the back of the woman's parents' home in Grassy Park.
The parents of the woman left their home shortly after police wrapped up their crime scene. Neighbors say they were too traumatized and could not bear being on the same property where their daughter and grandson lost their lives.
24 hours a day. Eyewitness News. As it happens, when it happens. From Cape Town's number one news and information station. 567 Cape Talk.
Change the way you look at traffic with a new Opel Astra GTC. Its patented panoramic windscreen means you see more than just the bumper of the guy ahead of you. And the roomy interior makes breathing easier in those inevitable traffic snarl-ups. Of course, the Astra GTC comes packed with award-winning safety features and luxury touches. Test drive your Opel Astra GTC at Thorpe, Paarl, Plumstead and Fishhook. Thorpe Motor Group, your Opel, Isuzu and Chevy dealer in the Western Cape.
Oh, that was a hard hit. And the retort is just as fierce. Johnson's just not thinking about his responses, you see. He's throwing punches all over the place. The audience is enthralled. What a show!
Become a commentator.
Call the Cape Talk comment line and tell us what you think about 567 Cape Talk. Call 446-4792. The 567 Cape Talk comment line. We're listening.
567 Cape Talk.
Cape Talk.
With Lisa Chiat.
Well, Nick, talk to us about Cobus Clausens and Neil Ellis. I mean, they speak openly in the documentary. They are, one's a Rhodesian, the other's a South African. Their stories are quite compelling, Nick.
Just one thing to address. I will definitely answer the question, but one of the very interesting things, and you nailed it just before we went into the commercial break, is the use of the word mercenary. The reason that's a very interesting word is because a lot of the people who work in the industry now, even though they might use that word amongst themselves to describe what they do, would never use that word publicly. And I thought this was fascinating, and this was something that we went into investigating quite a lot, and you can see this in the documentary. There's a whole section where every person who we interview is given the opportunity to answer the question of what does the word mercenary mean to them. You see, mercenary has two meanings. Mercenary, it has an international meaning, which is very strangely defined by the United Nations, and by that definition, virtually nobody, no private soldier working worldwide technically falls under that definition. It obviously, as many people in South Africa know, has a definition under the South African Foreign Military Assistance Act, which again has, you know, doesn't, given the number of South Africans currently working in Iraq and many other conflicts worldwide, I would argue has had very little effect on South African individuals' involvement in foreign conflict. However, it has this other meaning. It has this very negative connotation. It has this meaning of these, you know, knife-wielding baby killers. And while perhaps that meaning might have been relevant during a certain period of this century, my personal experience with a lot of the people that I spoke to, and I include Cobus and Neil in that group, so I'm finally getting to the answer to the question you actually asked, is that a lot of these guys are simply, you know, professional soldiers who happen to choose to work in the private sector. So, yes, by some people's layman's definitions, they are mercenaries simply by choosing to use military skills in a sector that doesn't involve wearing a uniform and doesn't involve fighting for a nation-state army. Nonetheless, that word means something very different, and this is something that, that, like I said, we tried to get across in the documentary.
Now, we hope to speak to Cobus, who is somewhere in Africa. We have been asked not to say. I assume he's working. Give us a background to Cobus Claessens, please. He's very vocal in the documentary. He's quite a character. What can you tell us about him?
I can tell you quite a lot, but I'm only going to say a little bit because I suspect that some of the stuff that he chose to discuss with me, he wouldn't necessarily want aired in too much detail. However, though, I will say one thing, first of all, which is how I came to meet Cobus. You asked me earlier in the interview how I managed to get some of these guys to speak to me and whether that was uncomfortable. Well, the key thing with a lot of these guys is building up an element of trust. Once some people started realizing that it wasn't in my interest to make a sneer piece which had no interest in the truth whatsoever, but to tell a balanced story, it took a little bit of time. It took a little bit of, I guess, networking. But eventually I got to the point where people started to trust me. And because they started to trust me, they started to be more honest about exactly what they did and why they did it. I actually traveled to Sierra Leone to meet Cobus. Cobus, after a long career as a professional soldier in the South African Defense Force, worked for a well-known organization called Executive Outcomes. He was a fire force commander in Sierra Leone during the conflict there, and he stayed on to live in Sierra Leone. He totally fell in love with Sierra Leone. He spends half his time there and half his time in South Africa. So I spent 10 days with him in Sierra Leone and got to know him quite well. I felt that he helped me understand a lot of the motivations behind the people who choose this kind of work. And the interesting thing is, you know, obviously money is a big factor.
Yeah.
For a lot of the guys going into this line of work today, it's a bigger factor than it ever was before, simply because there's more money available. I mean, the kind of rates these guys are pulling, they can get sometimes upwards of $1,000 a day doing this sort of work in Iraq. This money isn't available in many other conflict zones, but still, generally, the sector is very healthy and people can make more money than they ever could before.
Let's talk to Cobus Claessens, who is in Africa on a cell phone. Cobus, welcome onto Cape Talk. How are you?
Hello, Lisa. I'm fine, thank you. If the signal goes away, it's because I'm in Lagos, Nigeria, so let's do the best we can.
Are you busy working?
I am, yes.
Cobus, I wanted to start off and ask you your views on Nick Du Toit and what happened in Equatorial Guinea. Would you be prepared to share with us what you know about that?
Well, yes, it's too long a story, I think, to sort of discuss in a radio interview, and also just my view of it, which is not an informed view. It's just something I picked up on the grapevine, as everybody else has. But go ahead and ask your questions.
Was it a setup, or is he guilty?
Yes. The short answer is yes, the guys were guilty of what they were accused of. There's another issue with regards to whether the due course of law had been followed, and also whether the punishment that they have received is in line. The guys in Zimbabwe is out fine. I think that was a wrap over the fingers for the industry as a whole. The guys in Equatorial Guinea, guys like Nick, has been locked up unfairly. Nick was also a victim of circumstance to a certain extent, as far as I can.
Is Nick a mercenary?
Hello, Lisa. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Cobus, is Nick a mercenary or a businessman who got caught in a bad situation? It's your view.
Nick was, same as me, a mercenary. There's so many definitions and shades of gray when it comes to that word. But yes, in the past, we all were. I think, wanted to do the same that I did in Sierra Leone, which is move away from that line of work, establish himself in business that has to do with security, but it is normal business. And I think he longed for that, and that's exactly what he started doing. From what I can understand, he started up a little fishing protection business in line with the government's policy with that regard, an airline. And he was forging ahead doing business there. And then he was made an offer which, for various reasons, he couldn't or wouldn't refuse. And he went ahead and participated in this coup attempt.
Were you asked to be part of that as well, Kobus?
No, luckily not. I dropped off the circuit, a while back, getting busy in Sierra Leone, running first my own security company and then doing other business there. I was no longer available, so people stopped calling me.
What do you do now for a living, Kobus?
I'm back in the security business as a consultant. I work for myself. Right now I am consulting for a British firm. And what it entails is just normal, run-of-the-mill domestic security work. For example, a big corporation wants to move into a market where security is an issue, such as Nigeria, which is where I am now. And then they would ask me to come in and assess the risk and then to advise the client on how to deal with that, which is what I'm doing right now.
When you were working as a mercenary, let's use your definitions, did you ever make a choice not to take a job because of a philosophical or political view? Or did you ever make a choice to take a job because of a strong political desire to be involved in the situation?
No, Lisa, politics had nothing to do with it, to be honest with you. Not even our own politics in South Africa. Most of the guys like myself moved into this line of business because it was a natural progression. We go after the money, as simple as that. Many guys felt they had a dead end in the military careers in the army. I didn't feel that way. I was just made a better offer. It was to do what I was trained to do, but at that time was very competitive money. And I've got to tell you, it's nothing compared to even what normal army officers is paid today in the South African Army. At that time, my salary, which is one of the better ones, was $3,000 a month, $3,200 a month. But yes, it was something else to do, and it was better money, so that motivated me. It had nothing to do with politics.
Kobus, have you worked in Iraq?
Hello, you there?
Have you worked in Iraq, Kobus? All right, we've lost the link to Kobus Klaassen's. It was really fascinating, Nick, for people to listen to somebody who was a mercenary talk so openly. That's what you found also with Neil Ellis, the Rhodesian, describes himself as a Rhodesian. Were you surprised at how open they were in talking about their lives and what they'd been involved with?
Well, I was surprised I was a little bit surprised that as to being able to find them. But once I got to know them a little bit better, I realized that there's a number of different reasons why they don't feel that what they've done in the past. I know that many different people in working in this industry have had many different accusations leveled at them from a variety of different sources, mostly, you know, different aspects of the non-governmental or other international community organizations. But there's a very large element of pride in what, in particular, Kobus and Neil have done in Sierra Leone. They feel Sierra Leone is their homeland. You know, they are treated, I mean, having spent time with both of them there, they are treated in such positive fashion by the overwhelming majority of people of all colors that they interact with, that I can see that the Sierra Leone people feel that they owe a massive debt to Executive Outcomes for stabilizing their country's situation. And it's something that I'm not making up this information. This is not an opinion I'm getting just from Kobus. I can feel that when I go there and when I see how these guys interact with the local people there. And I think it's a testament to their faith in the country that they've chosen to make their home there.
Did you have to catch yourself, Nick, when you were interviewing these guns for hire, and you interview many of them around the world, did you have to sort of catch yourself and think to yourself, look, these are people who are doing this for the money, but they're also killers for the money? I mean, that's what Kobus has done, that's what Neil Ellis has done, that's what all of the others have done.
When you say, did I have to catch myself, what do you mean by catch myself?
Was it an issue for you at all? I mean, interviewing a businessman is one thing. Interviewing a businessman who will kill dispassionately in order to get his paycheck at the end of the day is another. Did it concern you?
Yeah, I understand what you mean. It's something that definitely crossed my mind. But to be honest, I've spent a fair amount of time prior to doing this interview talking to professional soldiers. And, you know, one might make the argument that professional soldiers also kill for money. Now, because they get paid a job, and in some instances their job involves having to fire a weapon in anger. Having talked to professional soldiers before, soldiers that have served in combat zones and had to fire weapons because someone else was firing at them, I think I had an interesting idea as to how some of that psychology worked. Bearing in mind that I've never experienced something like that myself, so I was coming into this as an external observer. And to me, it seemed as though it was something that no matter who you are, unless you're some sort of a maniac, and I certainly didn't come across any of those, this is not something that you do and enjoy it. In other words, you don't just suddenly go around and kill people and go, this is great, and I get a paycheck at the end of the day. It's something that you do reluctantly. You know, most people use force with measure, because if you don't use force with measure in a military and a strategic environment, you're going to screw up, especially when you're dealing in a private sector and you don't have 65 helicopter gunships and other forms of support to call upon. You have to be careful as to exactly what you're doing, and you have to exercise caution. So while I was always fully aware that I was talking to people who had killed people before, and in some instances were likely to do so again, I never felt like I was talking to people who were in any way unstable, if that's what I mean. So that didn't bother me.
We're going to leave it there, Nick. Thank you very much. Nick Buchanick, who is the director and producer of Shadow Company, one of the documentaries looking at guns for hire mercenaries. It's a very interesting watch. If you've found this interesting listening to, I recommend you get on the line and book your ticket at the Encounters Documentary Film Festival. ShadowCompanyTheMovie.com will give you more information about the movie. You can also order it on that website, ShadowCompanyTheMovie.com. Thank you very much to Nick, and also Nick, thank you for setting up that interview with Cobus Clarsons, former SADF Parachute Regiment Major and mercenary who is now working as well in the more formal security business, he says.